Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 233. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
We're singing the blues here in Lakeville.
And Phil Wilson.
Yeah, sweet.
And our buddy Graham Thickens is, he's doing another somewhere show with his wife, Iowa. Right? Somewhere wet?
Somewhere in Iowa.
Yeah.
Is it Iowa this week?
He's in the tri-state area.
He's in the tri-state area. So how you boys doing?
Just fine. And your own bad self, Steve?
Well, good. I've been playing with my new iPhone 5S.
Oh, no. Oh, you got your iPhone 5S.
Space gray.
Space gray, but it's in a case, so who cares, right?
Does that space gray, is that black? Is that what that is?
No, it's kind of a gray in the back instead of the black glass. They did some sort of anodized aluminum. But you know, it is faster. It's just that when I put iOS 7 on my 4S, it was such a new device. I thought, oh geez, I should just keep this thing and wait for the 6. But
there you go.
Anyway, no, it's much, much faster, and it's got LTE. And
yeah, my son got a 5C yesterday.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, he works at a big shot law firm in Washington D.C. and he needed either a BlackBerry or an iPhone for one of their app. You know, they have like these secure apps. Oh. So he switched from his Galaxy S3 to the iPhone 5C, and he likes it a lot.
Cool.
I figured that, you know, he had to pay for it himself. So $550 was enough.
Okay.
So
wow.
Great.
Yeah, that's a little bit. He said he'll love it after he gets over the shock of paying $500 for a phone.
I know. But, you know, I almost bought this one outright until I looked at the fact that with Apple Care and everything else, it'd be like $1,200.
Oh, my God.
I said, I'm not doing that.
Because you got, what, the 64 gig?
Well, I have to because I've only got 7 gigs free.
Really?
I've got music and photos and videos on it, and I have to clean it all off. Basically, but my apps would take up about 70% of that space.
So that complete season of Dragnet, you can just take that right off.
No, actually it's Bewitched and
Gilligan's Island.
Gilligan's Island. I was trying to think of some other lame show.
Hey, are you calling Gilligan's Island lame?
That was a classic.
That was a classic.
Sorry.
It was lame.
Okay. So real quickly. Show of hands, Ginger.
Marianne,
hello.
Okay, Marianne.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Yeah. That's the smart choice.
Yeah. Well, I thought she was the girl next door.
Yeah, boy, I wish she was.
Yeah, if you lived in Kansas, yes.
You're Iowa. Right, Phil?
Yep.
Yeah.
She was the girl next door in Iowa, wasn't she? Didn't you?
I think she was from Kansas.
From Kansas, that was it. Yes.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was a kind of a side reference to Wizard of Oz.
That's right.
Oh yeah.
And then you know, Ginger was the Marilyn Monroe actress character. So all of the characters are archetypes of something else.
Yeah.
Right.
But the thing that really pisses me off, if we're going to go on a '60s TV show, Jack,
we're not. Anyone listening, we're
is,
not.
is how much of a blatant ripoff of the Honeymooners the Flintstones is.
That's
it. Bothers me.
That has to have bothered you for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, it's been years. It's been 40 years. Yeah.
Well, can we talk about Davy Crockett and the racist? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
All right,
It's interesting that you guys, we got off on this cartoon tangent only because this morning I was going through my Facebook feed and somebody had posted this really great performance by an orchestra in Britain, but that did a medley of the Tom and Jerry scores.
Seriously.
It's really good. I'll put it in the show notes because I just thought it was really good. I mean, it was interesting to see. But again, this will only appeal to those people that remotely remember Tom and Jerry. So,
well, let's be a little bit more current. Who's seen the IT Crowd, the British show? It's available on Netflix now, most of the seasons. But my son and I started watching this.
because
several years ago,
you said to your son, "Hey, let's watch a show about IT people."
It's a comedy and it's nerds. Anyway, the point is that we frickin' howled when we started getting into it, and they're going to do a final episode. So if anybody watches IT Crowd, you're going to want to pay attention to that. Anyway, funny
Steve,
stuff.
Steve, since you're into British TV.
Yeah.
Downton Abbey is back.
I know. We've already seen. Yeah.
Okay. I'm watching. Guys, no spoilers, please. I'm watching it like tonight. So
you're watching the BBC. It's the BBC rollout of it.
Yeah.
No, it's ITV.
ITV.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be on PBS in 8 months. You know,
it's in January.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna patronize my public television and wait till then.
Well, you know what's really interesting?
You are so good, Phil.
There's huge debates over this delay with Downton Abbey. So there was a panel discussion with the cast of Downton Abbey, and the woman who, I think she's like executive vice president or something for PBS, and a woman got up, and there were several people that had made comments about why in the world do you guys delay? And one woman got up and said, "Look, you know, I'm on all these Downton Abbey fan sites and I go to the blogs and everything else, and everybody sees these episodes and then writes about them. And so there's spoilers, you know, with all the episodes." And she said, "So I started downloading them and watching them." And she says, "So now I've seen them all, the ones that are coming." And the woman who was the head of PBS, you could see that she was just incredibly flustered. And she starts off her comeback saying, "Well, first of all, you know that that's illegal."
Illegal.
And she starts going on and on about, you know, they want to have, you know, this is the time when, you know, January, when people can really watch it because they're home, you know, blah, blah, blah. Totally missing the point. The point is in a day when somebody can publish a blog post in London and it's instantly available, and there's spoilers in it. I mean, you can't, even if you're on Twitter, you can't avoid people discussing this if they're in the UK. And so this whole model is broken. So they've got to change. In fact, let me ask you guys, you know, Target debuted that digital video movie service. What's
Target Ticket?
Target Ticket. Yeah. And have you guys gone out and looked at the website?
No.
Does it look?
I saw it earlier when they were testing it. It looks pretty good.
And what do you think? Do you think it's going to go anywhere?
No, of course not.
Why not?
Why? What's the need for it?
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't offer anything that their competitors don't already offer. I mean, they're going to have to match Walmart feature for feature, and they're still going to be, I don't know, they're not going to be that interesting because this ground has already been plowed.
Well, so here's the question I've got. You know, they're using that ultraviolet system, and in Julio's article about Target introducing this system, they're using it to protect content. You know, the ultraviolet system is one where the movie studios have lined up behind it, and they're going to be releasing common file format, so you can, you know, if you don't like Target at some point, you're going to be able to switch to Walmart or Best Buy or somebody else, or Vudu, the Walmart service now.
Right.
And so, you're going to be able to move your files from place to place.
Well, it doesn't quite work that way right now.
Okay.
Right now, when you have your digital copy, so Ultraviolet is this just a standard that the studios have agreed to. And you need a service to play that
content. Yeah.
So right now, when you buy your DVD or your Blu-ray and it comes with the digital copy and you choose to not trade it online, which a lot of people do, but if you wanted to redeem it, you need to pick a service to redeem it with. So right now it's Cinema Now, which is Best Buy service, Vudu, which is Walmart service, or now the Target Ticket. So once you redeem it with one of those services, you're locked in. So that content, that movie, will be now only available to you at, say, Vudu or Target.
Well, so here's my understanding. And this was based on the Wikipedia article and also on Ultraviolet's website, is that you basically, when you sign up with Target Ticket or CinemaNow or somebody, that you're actually creating an Ultraviolet account. And that Ultraviolet account is where you'll have your digital rights locker. So if I buy a movie from Amazon, if they're participating, and then I buy one from Best Buy, and then I buy one from Target Ticket, all three of those are in my digital rights locker. So,
correct.
So essentially I've got, it's stored and managed there with, you know, regardless of who sold it to me.
Right. But once, so I have a bunch of movies in this locker right now. And some of them are with CinemaNow because I started there, and some of them are with Vudu. And I can't figure out a way to move between the accounts. If I wanted to say, okay, I want my, you know, 10 crappy movies they gave me at CinemaNow to be available at Vudu, there's no way to do that. Maybe it's because they gave me those 10 crappy movies. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's one of the things that they talked about with this digital locker, is that it's not storing the files, that it's just storing the licenses to those.
Correct.
So that you can
Play it through Ultraviolet. You have to play it through a service.
Right.
And then one of the fatal flaws of all these services, and they're all, you know, all of them work in some which way or other with mobile devices. So that's why it, you know, it kind of is interesting from that perspective. But you can't like download the movies to your device. So if you wanted to watch your movie that you bought the DVD for, or the
streaming
Blu-ray,
only,
it's only streaming. Yeah. You can't like cache it onto your iPad or what have you, and play and watch it on an airplane.
Right.
Which I think it's kind of a fatal flaw.
You know, you're right. It really is. Because how many times have we done that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember going I remember going to Tokyo when we went there in 2004, I think. And I had my laptop all packed up with movies and then a bunch of kid movies. And so Alex, as soon as we sit down and take off, he goes, "Hey, Dad, can I watch a movie?" And I go, "Sure." And he goes, "Do you have a thing where Biz and I can both put our headphones in?" "Sure." And they did the splitter. Well, I never saw my laptop again. It's like they watched movies the entire way, and, you know, 13 hours worth of movies. And but to your point, they were all downloaded.
Yeah.
And so it's
very tough to stream on a plane.
I'll say.
You know, there's to keep it within this discussion, Amazon introduced the new Kindle Fires this week, which are, you know, the speed bumps basically of the old ones. And they're kind of starting to get interesting now. I think this is the third iteration, and the prices are low. And one of the things that they introduced as part of it is something that I thought that, say, Netflix or Hulu should also consider introducing, which is this ability to save the movie onto the device. So with the Amazon service, using a Kindle Fire, you're able to watch a movie and not stream it. So it actually saves the whole movie. But you look at, say, Netflix, and they're not able to do that because the digital rights holders won't let them.
Right.
I have no idea what Amazon did. They must have somehow convinced them, the rights holders, that this kind of copy protection they're using is rock solid or something.
Well, I was, you know, I know that you say they're just a speed bump, but I was really, frankly, amazed at the Kindle Fire HDX and what you get for the price. Now, granted, they're underwriting that because they expect that people are going to buy a lot of content from Amazon. But have you, because both you guys are serious Android users, have either one of you actually put one of the new ones or even one of the closest iterations to this new one through its paces, and would it operate like a generic Android tablet?
No,
it
doesn't.
Not,
it's no. Yeah, I've looked at them in all their various states of development, and you know, it's basically an Amazon custom user interface that's written on top of Android, but it could be running on Windows for all you know, or another flavor of Linux. It is completely different. It's obviously tuned to the Amazon ecosystem, and it only includes the Amazon App Store. It doesn't include the Google Play Store. So you're locked into the Amazon ecosystem, just like you would be on the iPad, mm-hmm. Into the Apple ecosystem, where you can't buy stuff from other vendors.
Yeah. Are you able to override that so you can load Google Play or not?
Yeah, if you're tech savvy, you can jailbreak the thing and, okay. and load on regular Android if you want. I mean, there's plenty of ROMs available, but if you want to keep it stock, and you have to keep it stock to access the Amazon services. So the whole reason to get the Fire is that all those video services in particular are only available there. So gotcha. They're available yeah. there, and then they're available perplexingly enough on the iPad. So if you're really into the Amazon ecosystem, you either have to get a Kindle Fire or go over to the iPad to get that content. You can't, they don't have that app available on the Play Store for those of us that use, you know, other Android devices.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
Well, you know, my wife, she upgraded her Kindle, and then when she got an iPad, she said, "Oh gosh, you know, I'd like to have all my Kindle content on my iPad." And it was like, "Well, you can." And so yeah. Elizabeth downloads the Kindle app and logs her in, and boom, she's like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing!" You know?
Yeah, but I'm seriously thinking. I haven't bought a Kindle, but I'm seriously thinking about getting one now, because you know, I do read on the iPad, and God, the iPad's just too heavy for reading. It really is. And it is not easy to read outside with an iPad. So,
yeah. Well, you got an iPad 2 though, Phil. I mean, I'm sure that the iPad 5 will probably be plenty light.
Well, yeah, it'd be light then. I'll deal with it then. But, you know, I think a Kindle's got some, you know, the whole, is it what, Paperwhite technology?
Well, that's the new one. Yeah. The Paperwhite. And then they have a Paperwhite 3G, which has, wireless access, so you can buy and download books and do some very, very, very limited web browsing and so forth. But if you're just into reading text, just a cheap regular Kindle is a great investment. I mean, they're like $70.
Yep.
So I mean,
and they're light. They're light as anything.
They're very, very light. Yeah.
They're even lighter than a paperback.
Yeah, and I would probably step up to the Paperwhite, because it's like just a little over $100 and you know, it looks amazing. I haven't seen one in person yet. I've just seen a couple of videos, but we're Amazon Prime members and we love Amazon, and that's where we buy just a ton of our books. And I have, you know, like you, Phil, you know, you talk about that the iPad is heavy. I don't have the issue with that. It's that I'm so hyper aware of battery life and how long it takes to charge the iPad that I don't want to sit and read and have the thing go down to 20%, because then if I need it for something else and I can't. So I've actually thought about buying a Kindle as a, just a separate thing, just to use strictly for reading.
Yeah. Just for and reading. It's lighter. It's easier to read in the sunlight. It's I just think it's, you know,
it's easier on your eyes.
It is easier on your eyes.
Right, right.
And those of us 98-pound weaklings in the room. It's
you should start using some barbells. Well, you know, the only thing that drove me crazy, and now I'm looking at the page, the Amazon Kindle Paperwhite page.
Yeah.
$119, but power adapter is not included. That's $15. Hell? Yeah.
Well, everybody has a mini USB anyway.
True.
You know?
True.
Or is it micro? I forgot. It's one of the smaller
USBs.
I think it's
a micro USB. Yeah.
So, yeah, but every device has those except for Apple devices. So I guess they're assuming that you already have, you know, power adapters.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's true, though. That's true, though. But, you know, here's been my one big issue. And I'm not going to say their names, though they probably never listen to the podcast.
They know.
But I have two sister-in-laws, both of whom have wanted to have me lend them micro USB power supplies. And one of them, I said, "Well, wait, we have to look at the amperage that's needed and how many watts, and they're not compatible." And so I've seen that a lot with people who, you know, they're plugging in power supplies that are not right for the device that they're trying to charge. And so that's another issue. And
hey,
I'm sure.
Steve,
what?
Steve, I've got one word for you.
What?
Monoprice.
Okay.
Monoprice, you don't buy cables from those guys?
Well, it's not.
They've got some really good cables and really good power adapters. And yeah,
put a link in the show notes. Not, yeah.
They're not super inexpensive, but they're, you know, inexpensive enough.
They're less.
Yeah, but it's not.
That's
where
I buy all my HDMI cables because they are a lot cheaper there.
No, I've got a ton of cables, micro and mini USBs and regular USBs and printer USBs and all kinds of stuff. The cable itself's not the issue. It's the power supply. And so so many people think, well, I'll just use that BlackBerry power supply to charge up my Kindle Fire. It's like, no. You know, the old one I've got laying around. No. You don't want to use an incompatible power supply just because it has the right cable connector. And so I got into an argument with somebody about the Lightning cable and about why Apple would go with a Lightning cable. Well, I believe this is one of the reasons that they did that was that it wasn't just about the cable. It was about the charging mechanism.
I think it's about selling a $3 cable for $30. That's
exactly
about.
Right. That's exactly what it's about, kids.
Okay. All right.
Hey, well, no, you do disagree with that. That's all. It's always about that.
Well, yeah. I think that's why they're doing cases as well. But, hey, let's talk about the,
wait a minute. Before we leave tablet talk.
Wow. Come on. What?
Before we leave tablet talk, I am personally relieved that Microsoft has updated the kickstand on the Surface.
Yeah. On the Surface too.
Oh, yeah. I rest easier knowing that that kickstand is now up,
me too.
Fixed up.
You know what though? I mean, they've modified the price and, you know, they're going to keep plugging away until they get it right.
And they upgraded the processor, which is the big thing, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
They're using that with the Haswell processor now. So
would you buy one?
Nope.
No, you know what the problem with Surface is? It's an interesting idea, this whole thing of having a kind of a laptop tablet, you know, so it's a tablet plus. But the reason that no one else has done this is not because it's an innovative, great idea. It's because I don't think anyone wants that. They either want a laptop or they want a tablet. They don't want something that's sort of in the middle.
Okay.
And yeah, that's going to be why this thing is not going to be successful, is because it's a product that's, you know, in search of a problem that no one has.
Are either one of you running Windows 8?
No.
Well, so
I'm running Windows 7 though.
Well, so our bookkeeper of 20 plus years,
I'm a big fan of Vista myself, but go on.
Yeah. Well, she's
Phil, Vista wasn't bad after they fixed it.
Yeah,
it wasn't. Windows 7 was great. But our bookkeeper
is
of
great.
Our bookkeeper,
it's the XP of our age.
It is.
we're going to be using this dang thing 15 years from now.
Well, so our bookkeeper of over 20 years, her husband is a former IBMer. And so one would realize that they are dyed-in-the-wool PC users and know it well and so on. I can't tell you how hard I worked at modifying Windows 8 so that it would just boot into the desktop, and I put a third party start button and did a few other things to try to make it as Windows 7 like, because, you know, I could care less about the old Metro interface. I forget what they're calling it now. The point though
is Windows like or something like that,
something like that.
Yeah.
But the point is that the last two times she's been in the office to do her bookkeeping, she walked into my office and goes, I couldn't figure out how to shut the PC down, because she'll go down to the start menu and then the Windows 8 thing pops up and she clicks on it and then it goes into Windows 8 and then she has no idea where she is. And it's so unintuitive. I swear to God. I mean, if I spent all day, every day on it, I could finally figure it out. But, I don't get where they're coming from with it. I'm sorry. I know they're trying to do the transition between PCs and laptops, and Apple's going to do the same thing, but I just don't get it. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't think Apple's going to ever do a converged device. You know, I think that both of them are coming together, iOS and macOS, but I think there's always going to be that division there. And, you know, it's just going to be, you're going to be using macOS for development and for doing video and, you know, heavy duty image
or
stuff.
Publishing or doing audio or.
Yeah, well, I mean, or when you want a keyboard to like type stuff. I mean, I know you can get one for an iPad, but you have to say that, Steve, because you have both of these, I'm sure, that you'd probably rather do a document on a laptop with a keyboard than your iPad keyboard.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, in a pinch, you do the iPad thing, but you would prefer to do it on a laptop. So I just don't see having one device that's sort of a bad laptop and sort of a bad tablet as being a great idea.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea though.
Well, it is if it could in fact work, but I mean, just look at the three of us right now on here. You know, I'm sure you're like me. I've got a browser window open. I've got the recording software open. I've got a window into my laptop because that's where you guys are coming in from Skype. And I've got Photoshop open, you know, all the things to create the post afterwards. And so, you know, I can have multiple things open and have get a lot of work done pretty quickly. Pardon me. With a tablet, I've got to move between apps. I've got to open other ones and shut ones down and so on and so forth. And copying and pasting even an image is just a pain in the butt because you got to save it to your photo library and then insert it. You know, and so there's a lot of steps that you have to insert into any workflow in order to get stuff done. And I think that at the end of the day is the deal killer with trying to do a converged laptop tablet.
And it's slow.
Yeah, it really is slow.
Even on a $200 crap Windows laptop, you can get between windows very quickly.
Right.
You know, right. And cut and paste stuff where you're on your iPad or your Nexus tablet or whatever. And it's still slow, even though you're running maybe the latest, greatest stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just shift gears a little bit, as long as we're talking about, you know, mobile devices and all that, to this mobile app contest that's happening at MobCon. It looks like it's shaping up to be a decent event. Jake Coughlin, my old boss at Lawson Software, is now CEO of XRS, the mobile transportation company, is actually the keynote. I think he's the keynote.
I think it's the Google guy is the keynote.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Google guy is
the keynote. You're right. Yeah. The Google VP. It's, you know, they had this big contest to award $50,000 in prizes. But when you look at the Twin Cities Business article, they talk about MentorMate, who, you know, is a great, great organization, but it's services. You know, there's some cash, but
there's some cash. It's mostly service.
But it's $5,000 in cash and $45,000 from those guys in services.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, and I'll give away a $25,000 website that I normally charge, you know, $1,500 for. You know, and so, you know, it feels like that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it was, so. it's, you know, we were involved with that last year with a Mobile Twin Cities group I'm part of, and we were part of that last year, and I think they ended up giving the award to DoDrinks, which is really not a native app. It's a sort of a web service. So
it's an HTML5 app in a browser.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. It was okay. But, you know, I look at it as anybody that does anything to shine light on mobile development in the Twin Cities, that's okay.
Yeah,
you know, whether it's a big cash prize or not, it's good that there's recognition out there.
It's all right. And then another story that came out that I thought was just a little bizarre, I'm sorry, was how 3M with their Post-it brand and Evernote.
Well, I thought this was
what's up with that?
Like an April Fool's thing.
Yeah. And so you can take a photo in their app of your Post-it note, and they're doing optical character recognition on it, obviously, so you can search your Post-it note.
If you put it on a back of an envelope, you could do the same.
Yeah, thing. Exactly the same. You know, I looked at my, you know, oh, I got on Evernote God. And looked at my camera, and it's just like, oh, it's just the little thing that says optimized for Post-it note. It's like, what?
Yeah, and they've got a little 3M branding on it. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is like an April Fool's thing. If this was like around April, I would say, yeah, it's definitely April
definitely
Fool's.
April Fool's.
This could be an onion story. So
yeah, it could definitely. Yeah.
Well,
it probably was an onion story years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I use Evernote all the time, all day, every day, constantly. And I absolutely love Evernote until I started reading an Evernote power blog and realizing that, oh my God, there are people that do 25X what I do with Evernote. Yeah. And so now I feel like the bar has been raised. But when I read this, it was like, seriously? I don't even think power users would do anything like this. I have to admit, though, that I use an app called Scanner Pro on my both my phone and my tablet, and it is fabulous because I can take a photo, it turns it into a PDF, it will OCR it, but it will also modify the size and everything, and then you can click upload, and you can upload it to your Dropbox, your Box.net account, your iCloud account, whatever, and store it, or Acrobat.com account, you can store it. And it's just fabulous because what I'll do is I'll go to our PO box and I'll scan checks and then take them over to the bank. And the scans go directly into a Dropbox that's shared with our bookkeeper and my wife and our office manager. So everybody can, you know, do what they need to do. And it's really useful, but again, coming into this post-it note, it's like, what? I didn't get it. Well, also, in terms of mobile stuff, what about NativeX? What's going on at NativeX?
Yeah, I just saw that story. The St. Cloud Times reported that NativeX had to lay off some folks. Was 70? Was that what it was?
I thought it was 40-something. Let me look. 45.
45.
45.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
Doesn't sound good.
Yeah, which is all from, it sounded like mostly from their web team, you know, their which is where they started, but their mobile is now so much bigger.
Right.
And they did, I guess, I was looking at the story and they did have to let go of a mobile team that was not generating revenue for some reason. So it's always sad to see the, you know, companies that have built and grown so quickly having to be in that position. I don't know. You would hope that they'd be able to make, you know, find places for those people rather than laying them off. But,
well, you know what this reminds me of?
Business.
You know what this reminds me of, though, Phil, is listening to a talk at the, I think it was a Twin Cities Strictly Business Expo, to tell you how long ago that was. And the guy that gave the talk was from Microsoft, and he asked everyone in the audience a question. He said, let me see a show of hands. When, who in the last year has walked into a store like a CompUSA and bought shrink-wrapped software?
And yeah, it's been
maybe 10% of the audience raised their hand. And this was, again, this is maybe, gosh, 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it just showed how dramatically the business had shifted to downloading, even though the internet was relatively new. The same thing has happened with all the freebie downloads and all that stuff that was really the core of freeze.com and how they W3i got their start, and then they turned to NativeX as they moved into the mobile space. So it is all about mobile, and I can see why it was time to start to shift out some of these people, and they probably didn't need them all.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you just want to see success out of these guys because they're great, and it's a strong company, and they're doing a lot of great things, and so.
Well, not so much now.
Stop.
I'm just kidding.
I know you are.
I'm just kidding. I know. You know, layoffs are just a bitch. Just they're no fun. And I know that I know Andy probably he mentioned it as a heart-wrenching decision, but you know, it's I hate that.
Yep. Yeah, that was one of my least favorite things as a manager, is always firing people or having layoffs.
Yeah, yeah, it sucks.
It's tough.
It sucks in a big way. Guys, you know, we did exit tablet talk there without commenting on Martha Stewart's little rant. Did you see that?
Did you see that? Yes. No.
Okay, the story is she dropped her iPad.
That Steve Jobs gave her.
So right. She says, Steve Jobs gave me. And she didn't know how to get it fixed. What?
Yeah, so she starts tweeting, And then yeah, she
but
starts
she can't
tweeting.
Give it to one of her assistants and yeah, say, what? Go yeah. to the Apple store. Yeah.
Or, will Apple come and pick it up? What?
Go buy a new one for me. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, she was tweeting, well, I was just, you know, just kidding or, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, what? I mean, yeah. It was just bizarre.
It was very bizarre.
Maybe she was into the wine a little early.
You think? You
yeah.
think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Maybe she's just bad.
That would explain God. A lot.
Yeah.
There's every chance she's batshit crazy. So there's
well,
that.
There could be that.
Yeah. Well, she is getting kind of up there. So maybe, you know, a little senile.
Well,
yeah.
I love that was the link to the, what is it? What was the link to where that story came from that I pasted in there?
Imore.
Yeah. And I liked sort of the lead into that, which was the, you know, the convicted felon.
Yeah. No, the guy was very sarcastic.
Media mogul, domestic goddess, convicted felon, Martha Stewart.
Yeah. And the thing at the end where he says, Your Highness or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Very snarky sort of a thing.
Very, very much so. So. As you'd imagine from Canadians.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think Imore is from Montreal, I believe.
Is it?
Yeah, I think that's where they're based.
Oh, that's Rene Ritchie.
Yeah.
Who's on This Week in Tech a lot on the Mac Break Weekly show.
He's on Mac Break Weekly.
Yeah, 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 mm-hmm. yeah. And he's actually a super knowledgeable guy. I mean, I'm really, I like listening to his thoughts and analysis of various things that are going on.
Well, I'm glad he's not an idiot.
Yeah.
No, he's very, very knowledgeable. And, his English is excellent.
Yeah.
And it's.
Well, what did you guys think, by the way, of the interview with Bill Gates about the control alt delete thing?
I think that's funny.
Do you? Did you read though that the IBMers, discussion about why he originally did it, that he did it, you know, triple key login because of security stuff, and that it was an unlikely key combination that anyone would hit inadvertently, and that's why he did it, and that makes total sense, don't you think?
It does.
You know, rather than have some special key that somebody accidentally would hit.
I think it would be better to have a fingerprint sensor on the keyboard.
Yeah, in 1980.
Yeah.
Or whenever Windows come out. I don't know, 88 or something. Yeah.
Well, I just think it's interesting that he says, you know, it was a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, you've had plenty of time to fix it.
Yeah, true.
Well, then you get into this legacy thing. You really can't change it.
I know, the keyboard legacy thing. But well, I thought it was good fun.
Actually, I didn't say that too. When we were just briefly mentioning Windows 8. That's the issue, is that there are hundreds of millions of people around the world who have been trained in how to use the normal Windows desktop interface. And I think at the end of the day, that's the issue, is that, you know, Windows 8, if that was the very first thing you ever touched, then probably would be okay, because you wouldn't have to maybe do control alt delete on some of the newer devices. I don't know, but yeah, weird. Well,
yeah.
So do you think Ford's Alan Mulally is going to be the new CEO of Microsoft?
Could be. I mean, he was Boeing before he went to Ford, so yeah. I'm sure he's still got a house in the area. He's great. I mean, he really did turn Focus and turn Ford around and make them into like kind of the high tech car brand.
Yeah, he's really, yeah, he has.
So I think that if they're looking for new ideas, but the thing is that he's kind of retirement age. So he's retiring from Ford and they're working through that now.
How old a guy is he?
That's been known. I think he's early 60s, I want to say.
Okay.
So, I mean, the guy doesn't need any more money. I mean, he certainly, you know, was wealthy enough after the Boeing thing, and then he went to Ford, and I'm sure he's got a big deal there.
Right.
But I think he might be interested in it because it's a, you know, it's a proud company and brand, and from his, you know, where he spent a lot of his time. So maybe he'll do a short stint there. I think that would be, of all the people that they're talking about as next CEO, he would be the most interesting, and I would have the most confidence that Microsoft would kind of turn things around in a big way.
Well, I'm just looking at an article here that says people with knowledge of the situation said that while the 68-year-old Mulally was not seeking the job at first, he's become more amenable to the idea in recent weeks. And, I mean, I know how I feel now.
Wow.
And I can't imagine in being 68 and trying to take on a challenge the size of a Microsoft and turn that thing around.
I don't know if that's that's interesting, you know, but then again, you know, you don't want to, doesn't matter what age, as long as, you know, as they have the vision, they have the ability to, you know, surround themselves with the right people and are smart enough. Yeah, it shouldn't make any difference.
Yeah.
He's smart enough and he's very energetic for a 68-year-old guy.
And I say that, of course, now, of course, as I, you know, rapidly start to approach older age. quick, don't discount yourself.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, that one of the things that really stunned and delighted me was how Ford Motor Company had really embraced social media and had really gotten themselves out there what was the guy's name who's head of social media at Ford? Is it Scott somebody?
Scott Mani.
Scott Mani, yeah. We saw him locally here when he was at General Mills doing the event. But he's really, Mulally really had pushed the envelope a lot. And he even interviewed with The Verge and This Week in Tech and I think one other, so maybe Engadget or Gadget, one of the two of them. But totally understanding that if you want to reach an audience, especially one that's, you know, 40 and under, then you got to go where they're watching. And that was I thought that was a big deal for a CEO of a major corporation to start to do. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. You guys aren't too excited. So
sorry.
I want to talk about my iPhone for just 2 seconds.
Oh, crap.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So
one of 9 million sold last week.
Well, that's what I was going to say was that, you know, people that missed
you are an individualist. You are an individualist. That's all there is to it.
Well,
you're no sheep.
So our own Piper Jaffray guy here locally in Minnesota.
Herman Munster.
Herman Munster. Gene Munster is his name. Anyway, he had come out with a prediction.
He's never heard that one.
I'm sure
never.
He hasn't. Between 5 and 6 million. And of course, then they turn in a number of 9 million. So now he's doing a humma saying, well, you know, that was really channel fill, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the one thing that he didn't point out was that the reporting was based on exactly the same metrics that were used in every single other reporting going all the way back to 2007 when the iPhone was originally introduced. So there hasn't been any other method of reporting or fudging the numbers or anything that they were intimating. And so the number is the same. So I thought that was a pretty amazing blowout, but they still, you know, the stock still isn't doing that great. You know, it's still not back up to where it was, you know, over $500 a share again.
I'd panic if I were you.
Well, no. When they finally come out with that Apple TV, Munster will be happy. He's been predicting that thing for like 5 years.
He has.
And he's not discouraged. Every year they don't do it, and every year it comes back. His prediction.
Yeah, they're going to do it. It's going to be worth billions.
And someday he will be right, but I'm not sure if it'll be anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Only a matter of waiting.
It seemed to be. You know, all these stories about Tim Cook's Apple, and it seems like a very methodical organization, you know? I think that we saw so much innovation in the late Steve Jobs era because he was dying, and he wanted to get the iPad out. Wanted it. So there was this urgency because he was going to die. Mm-hmm. And now they seem to be like slowing things down and doing things exactly at the right time to make the most money. So I think in the long term, people look back and say, you know, maybe Steve Jobs had more innovation and broke more barriers, but I think Tim Cook's going to make more money for the stockholders.
Yeah, Well,
what's really sad is that Steve Jobs wasn't able to get his Post-it note with Evernote thing put together in time.
His deal? Yeah. His deal. To dominate Post-it note capture worldwide. Oh God. Well,
so now that we've talked a little bit about Apple, Tim, what are you rocking now for an Android device? What are you using?
A Nexus 4.
Have you rooted that, or is there no need to root that?
There's really no need because at least at this stage, it stays up on the latest version of Android as soon as it comes out.
Gotcha.
So once you go Nexus, you really don't go back. So,
yeah.
You know, I've got a Nexus 7 for a tablet, and it's really great because it just keeps in sync, and I don't find any reason to root. When I had other devices that didn't, they never shipped upgrades, you would root it and stick CyanogenMod on there.
So,
just to stay up so you could run Jelly Bean or whatever.
Right.
Interesting.
No, I haven't. I keep trying to, I'm desperately trying to keep it stock simply because of the need to, test Android devices that we develop at HyperIQ. But it was just one of those things that I'm thinking, I'm really, because I have increasingly difficult problems with accessing or being able to access data on the device, depending on where I am. I think that's more of a Sprint thing. Yeah. So I'm not necessarily too concerned, but at the same time, it's still got that bloatware on it that I'd like to think about getting rid of. So.
Yep. CyanogenMod. They're coming out as a legitimate company now.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you guys. Apple came out with iTunes Radio in the new version of iTunes and then also on iOS 7.
Yeah.
I've been a Pandora user now for, I pay them $30 a year or whatever it is. And my daughter absolutely swears by Spotify. And I've kind of gone back and forth between Spotify. I haven't subscribed to Spotify. Do you guys use either one of those?
I've used both of them. I've subscribed to both of them. So,
and which is your preference?
Spotify.
And why?
Just a little bit more control. I mean, if I want to listen to an album, I can listen to an entire album. Whether it's new or old or whatever.
Yep.
Whereas Pandora is this constant suggestion engine, and Spotify incorporates the suggestion engine into the radio channels, but. I like that ability to have access to single songs or complete albums or album sides or whatever. So,
well, see when Pandora, okay, sorry.
Go on.
When Pandora first came out, the suggestion engine, as you called it, was so powerful and there was nothing like it. And it was recommending all these artists that I'd never heard of before.
Right. Yeah.
And so I was buying albums and buying individual songs based on discovering these artists, which was just fabulous. But now that I can stream just about anything, if I listen to the Beatles, I'll go to iTunes Radio and just click the Beatles and listen to the Beatles. Or I'll create a Beatles station on Pandora, or I could probably do it on Spotify, in a better way, perhaps create a playlist that I could listen to. But, so my buying of music has dropped pretty dramatically.
Well, my problem with Pandora remember, I'm a fan. Don't get me wrong. I am a big fan of Pandora for what it's really designed for. And that is that discovery of new music, that ability to, find new artists that may appeal to you based on that music genome that you've put in there. The problem I've had with Pandora is it's a fairly intense setup process to really get a channel that works well as far as suggesting new stuff for you. Because when you like a new favorite or you enter an artist that you're basing this whole channel on, until you spend a lot of time with it, you get a lot of repeats and a lot of the same artists. And it's just sort of it's frustrating to some extent. So,
yeah.
You face that with everything. I seem to have less problem with that on Spotify, but then again, I may not be getting as great a music suggestion out of Spotify as I would with Pandora.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But Pandora, for the simple fact that Pandora has broken down the barriers for all of these services. I mean, Tim Westergren and Pandora were the first ones in, and they've probably taken the brunt of all of the, you know, the litigation involved.
And all, oh, yeah, no question. You know, they, all the copyright stuff.
Yep. Yeah, yep. They've taken the brunt of that. So I think those guys are my heroes no matter what.
Yeah.
Even though I may not be using their system as much as they used to. Yeah. But that's just me.
Yep. Well, let's end our show with a look at David Letterman's top 10 least successful Minnesota businesses. The list. And actually,
this came from what, an appearance at the Minnesota Business Partnership. I'm sure, obviously not an appearance in person, but an appearance
right.
Phoned it in.
Yeah. Well, it was something. Something with Franken, right? I mean, he was around.
Yeah.
He had asked him to do it and so on. Now, you know, it's not funny if you're not from Minnesota, but
I think that most people, you know, the strip mall of America, that's kind of funny.
Yeah. Buffalo mild mannered wings. I like
second Best Buy. Favorite though is the law firm of Olson, Carlson, Gustafson, Jensen, Peterson, and Schwartz.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Or Land of Lactose. Land O Lactose.
Or Hormel.
Hormel. Yeah. Ventura's Secret.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, after the Post-it note story, 2M makes a lot of sense to me.
It does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And I'm shopping at Prince's Awkwardly Shaped Guitar Center.
Oh, God.
So that was.
I thought it was, it was worth a chuckle. Yeah.
Nice little piece.
So. All right.
Well, listen, there's a lot of events coming up in the area, as Steve would say, in the tri-state area. And you can check a list of those on the Minovate.com site. So take a look at that. So
right. Show notes. They're there.
Notes. Everything is there you would ever want from today's podcast.
And more.
Probably more than you really care to. So we'll see you guys next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.